Hi, this is Julie Hyde, and welcome to the Making Account podcast, a podcast that is dedicated to business owners and leaders to inspire you to make it count in all areas of your life. I'll be sharing insights and interviewing some fantastic people who are creating their success and just getting out there and making things happen. And I hope by listening that you will get some great ideas that you can implement to start creating that ripple effect of change that you want to see and enable you to make what you do count even more. With us on the podcast today, we have Frank Bambino, and Frank is the Managing Director at Via Architects. He has over 22 years experience in his own business, and he's responsible for ensuring that both the business and the team at Via, who are a team of now 35 people, challenge the status quo to deliver above expectations, which is no easy feat in an industry that is incredibly competitive, very fast-paced, and incredibly challenging. So Frank is really passionate about creating meaningful outcomes through environments and spaces that respond to real human need and guiding clients to outstanding commercial benefits. Now, in this podcast, I think you're going to enjoy the diversity of the discussion. We talk about some leadership insights that he's gained over his years in business, the lessons that he's learnt, including the recent split from his long-term business partner, tips for future-proofing the business, the need to have the right people in the right roles on your team, and some really insightful discussion about the future of the workplace and the aged care industry, which is something that will impact us for those with aging parents or in the future when we need to be considering these types of facilities. Frank is insightful, he's passionate, and he's generous with what he shares. And I know you're going to get great benefit from listening to this podcast as a leader, and especially if you have your own business. So here's Frank. Frank, I've been lucky to know you and work with you over the past, few years now. And you're one of the first people I thought about to interview for the podcast. So I think you've got some absolute gold to share with business owners, but also from a leadership perspective and also from your own thought leadership around, the future of the workplace and the aged care industry, which I think is something that people are really interested in. So firstly, I'd like to cover a little bit about your success and the lessons that you've learnt in your 20 plus years in business.
Making me sound old. Yeah.
And secondly, as I said, to touch on your thought leadership. So let's jump into it.
Fire away.
So you are an architect.
I am. Yeah.
A very successful small business owner. So what did you actually want to be when you grew up?
I grew up in my dad was a bricklayer basically, so like all kids, you probably aspire to be what your dad wants to be. And then my dad thought that was a great idea, so he took me out and showed me how hard it was as a bricklayer and said, do you really want to be a bricklayer? And then, I suppose dad had a large part to do with setting me on the path to becoming an architect from that perspective and opening my eyes to what the options were from that point of view. Always had an interest in buildings from that perspective. Mm. So it seemed a natural fit from that point of view. And I've got to say, in terms of the diversity of what we do and the interaction with clients, with staff, and then actually physically creating something, it's certainly the right fit from my perspective. I enjoy it thoroughly, so it doesn't feel like work.
Getting an insight into the architectural industry, you just wouldn't know unless you have been involved what is really involved in being an architect. There's so much behind the scenes.
There is,
There's a lot of responsibility and there's a lot of care and dedication to, putting these beautiful spaces and structures together. So what drives you to do what you do?
I think it's ultimately the reaction you get from people when they walk into your spaces and actually experience them and actually benefit from those spaces. So that emotional interaction, I think, for some architects, it's creating an icon or a monument to themselves. But for me, it's more the emotional connection with the people that live in those spaces and use those spaces or work in those spaces. Mm. Don't get me wrong. We want to create beautiful buildings, and it's nice to drive past a building and say, hey, I did that. And if it wasn't for me, that wouldn't exist. Mm. But ultimately, it's the way those spaces engage with the people that really drives me more than anything else.
Yeah. You can see you really light up when you talk about that. That's very much a passion of yours. Yeah. And we'll touch on that a little bit later as well. So 22 years plus in business, no doubt you've learned a lot of lessons and, you know, experienced a lot of highs as well. Well, what would you say are a couple of your biggest lessons in business?
Look, business is a constantly moving beast from that perspective, and I think the biggest mistake you can make in business is not to make a decision. You know, you sit down there and mill over a decision, you're too scared to make a decision, and hence you'll fail. So ultimately, at the end of the day, the buck stops with you when you're the boss, when you're the owner of the business, and you've got to have belief in yourself that you'll make the best decision you can at the time. It's not always the right decision. You know, we always make mistakes in business. Anybody that tells you they haven't made a mistake is clearly lying from that point of view. But you've got to pick yourself up, learn from that, and then move on. And sadly enough, often the lessons that you learn the most from are the ones where you failed in the process of doing it the first time. So, and also just you've got to constantly be on guard for what direction things are going in. And, you know, if you're doing something a certain way and it's not getting you the results that you want, there's no point continuing to do that. You've got to change your path and actually find a different way of doing it.
And you really experienced that, I suppose, a couple of years ago where you really had to believe in yourself and the decision that you made and basically rebirthed a new business.
Look, exactly right. You know, it's no secret that I was in partnership for 20 years with a colleague, and we had a great partnership for a long, long time. But like all partnerships, the strength is when you're on the same page, whether it be a marriage or whether it be a business relationship. But you can become set in your ways and almost end up in a comfort zone where better the devil you know than the devil you don't know. So for me, you know, 2 years ago, it was, I suppose, the clear moment for me was getting home one day and my wife having a go at me because I was grumpy with her and grumpy with the kids, but it was all to do with stuff that was happening in the business. For whatever reason, my business partner and I developed different views as to where the business should be going. And the easiest thing is just to stay and continue on and hope that things will get better. But at some point in time, you've got to basically wake up to yourself and realize that, hey, you've hit the wall. You've gone as far as you can go in that relationship and make what is ultimately a very courageous decision to change things. And I did that 2 years ago. It was with quite a bit of trepidation and fear of the unknown from that perspective. And you've got all these, you know, you hear all these horror stories about what is and what might be. But ultimately, it comes down to the one thing that served me well throughout my life is actually having faith in my ability to make things happen from that perspective. So I took the jump, basically made a very difficult decision to work through a separation with my business partner. Fortunately, it was a fairly amicable separation from that perspective. We both saw the writing on the wall and realized that there was no point continuing on together. But it gave me the opportunity to really take a really long, hard look at the business, what worked, what I enjoyed doing, what I didn't enjoy doing, who the people around me that were important and needed to come along the journey with me. And hence, through part of the process, I promoted a couple of great people, Lenny and Mark, in the office to director level. And they've been fantastic support for me. But, yeah, it was I suppose it actually, as fearful as I was of the move moving forward at that point in time, coming out the other end, it actually just reinforces the importance of having faith in your own ability as a business owner. You've got to back yourself ultimately because nobody else will. So, and then, again, you can't be fearful of hard work. You put your head down, you bum up, and you work hard to get to where you want to go, and you make the decisions you need to make.
Throughout the evolution of the business and even where, you know, it's got to today, it's so important to have the right people in your business, you know, absolutely as a business partner, but working for you. And sometimes the people who have got you to a certain point can't necessarily get you to where you want to go. And that can be really difficult in a small business where it is quite emotional and it's very close-knit. And it's not like you can move people into different business units. It's a very different experience. So
I think when you're starting out, you know, you're a small team, you're the kingpin essentially, and you're actually, you know, you're almost giving directions to the orchestra, if you like, as to what they need to do. We had, you know, look, the business has been successful over the 20 years, there's no doubt about that. But as we evolved from, you know, a two-man band to a 10-person practice, we found that when we jumped from 10 to 20 and then to 30, the synergy and the dynamic of the office changed considerably from that perspective. no longer could we touch all things that were going through the office. And we had aspirations for some great people that were in the office, and they actually came along with us on the journey to take the next step. But what became apparent quite quickly was that not everybody has the appetite to take that next step. Mm. We typically every year we get together as a group and we run through a leadership weekend, essentially, where we actually push the boundaries of where we want to take the business and what we want to do. But it's also an opportunity for me as a business owner to understand what the aspirations of my team are from that perspective. And in the first round, as I say, probably 10 years in business, it was pretty evident that we got to a point where we had some great people that helped us to get to where we were. And those people were loyal staff that worked incredibly hard for you, but they didn't have the aspirations to step up to the next level and take responsibility as one of the team leads, where they would be responsible for the decisions they made. And they were still reliant on myself giving direction as to what needed to be done and when it needed to be done. And that ultimately becomes a noose around your neck, because you can't grow the business when you get to that situation, because you can't be all things to all people. You'll go insane trying to do it. So for me, it's actually, you know, identifying people that are on the same page as yourself. You know, we all work incredibly hard, so you need someone there that isn't afraid of hard work from that perspective, but most importantly shares the vision that you have as to where you want to take the business. So, and you need to discuss these things openly. It's never assume that the person sitting next to you, no matter how well you know them, is on the same page as you for the long term. Mm-hmm. So it's get down, you need to get down to the nuts and bolts and say, so what does that mean when you say you want to be here in 5 years? What does that mean to you? What steps do you envisage taking? And making sure that you're all on the same page as to what those steps are. Ultimately, I think, you know, that's where businesses can unravel. And I think that was probably part of the problem with where I was with my ex-business partner, in that at a high level, if you talked about what our aspirations were, we were both on the same page. It was how we were going to get there in the end that changed, you know, the differences in the visions from that perspective. Mm. So, you know, we spend a lot of time now with my co-directors now actually discussing the intricate steps of where we want to go and how we're going to get there. What are the critical pieces of the puzzle to get there? And like any problem, I always say to, you know, the team, no matter what the problem is or how big it is, it's a series of small problems. So you start with the long-term objective, and then you break it down into bite-sized chunks. And then when you do that, those bite-sized chunks are easy to overcome.
Mm. And communication's fundamental, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what do you think is important for you? Communication, you've touched on being one of them, to future-proof your business, because things just change so rapidly now.
Mm.
There's so many challenges with small business. The government doesn't make it easy.
No.
So what is key for you to future-proof?
Look, I think complacency is probably your worst enemy from that perspective. No matter how good things are, you've always got to be looking over your shoulder and looking for the next downturn or the next competitor coming into that space. So you've always got to ensure that the services that you provide to your clients are always the best of the best from that perspective. So from our point of view, we spend a lot of time understanding the markets that we play in, and actually understanding what motivates our clients. So, you know, often a lot of architects, I think, fall into the trap that it's all about the design component. The reality is design should be a given. It should be the default from that perspective. What we add over and above that is actually an intricate understanding of what drives our clients' businesses, whether it be the aged care space, whether it be workplace, mm. whether it be, you know, a residential developer. What motivates them, what drives them, and, you know, yes, at a high level it's profit, but often it's creating their own reputation, creating their own drivers from that point of view. So whenever we engage with a new client, we do spend a lot of time researching what their objectives are and understanding them, so that we can actually work genuinely as a partner with them to achieve their goals. And in achieving their goals, we achieve our goals. Mm. In addition to that, it's the diversity. I think, again, if you can be very good at one thing, and, you know, our office has evolved over the years. We had a 5 to 7 year period where workplace was the mainstay of the business from that point of view, and we were considered leading edge from that perspective. Over time, other competitors come into that space. Clients change and move on and develop new relationships. And we've evolved now where seniors living in aged care is probably, you know, the biggest sector of the market, and we're still strong in residential. So I think it's always having your eye on a level of diversity, being the best that you can be within those spaces to provide something that's unique and different. But knowing that every day there's another competitor wanting to come in and take some of that business away from you. Mm-hmm. So you protect that territory by being great at what you do, developing solid relationships with clients. So for the most part, our business is repeat clientele. Mm-hmm. So we work hard to develop those relationships and we stay loyal to those clients from that perspective by understanding what their drivers are. Ultimately, that makes their lives easier because they don't have to teach the new kid on the block. We know where they're coming from. But together we challenge each other to ensure that their business thrives, and in their business thriving, our business thrives from that point of view. So there's a few things in that.
Mm, absolutely. So let's touch on the future of the workplace, because that is rapidly changing. Mm. And for business owners out there, you know, there's this rapid move to flexible working, that people have offshoot side businesses that they're working on as well. And, you know, there's statistics saying that the entrepreneurial march is very much on and booming, and that in the future it's going to be very few people full-time employed. What do you think is really important for people to think about in terms of creating their workplace?
I think there's a number of variables in what you've just said there, Julie. I think it's workplace is one aspect, but I break it down to fundamentals at the end of the day. Look, every individual is going to have aspirations to do something a little bit differently. Certainly we have evolved as a society where the day that, you know, you graduated or finished high school and got a job and, you know, stayed employed with the same employer for your career, essentially 40 plus years, they're long gone from that perspective. Yeah. So people do change careers significantly more rapidly than they have in the past, certainly change jobs and careers from that perspective. But ultimately it's about flexibility. I think we're all far more aware of the opportunities that are there to us. Social media, the internet and all that has actually, you know, made knowledge available to us every day of the week. We're better informed. We're better able to educate ourselves. So ultimately as individuals, we always look for something that challenges us. We don't want to get bored for too long. So if the career you're in doesn't provide the challenge that you need, you'll look for something else. But if you take it down to basics, regardless what form your career as an individual takes, one of the biggest things that we know for a fact is that people crave that interaction with other people, that social interaction. All you've got to do is look at places like WeWork or the other collaborative working spaces that proves that. There's a whole lot of individuals there essentially that could work out of their own lounge room at home. Why do they go and pay some rent at a place like WeWork and those sorts of components? It's actually the ability to engage with other people, and while you're engaging with other people, learn from them, share knowledge, improve who you are, but hopefully improve someone else's opportunities. And we all benefit from that social network associated to it. Whenever we're designing a workplace, it's actually about replicating that aspect of it. So understanding that the core reason, aside of earning a salary, obviously, for people come to work is to engage. The technology is there that, in theory, we could all work from home. Mm. Okay, we even ran a bit of a synopsis a number of years ago for Telstra, and we said, "What is the future of workplace?" And said, "With the technologies, the virtual reality, you could literally sit in your lounge room in a virtual meeting room and actually meet with a whole lot of other people." But that doesn't allow for that social interaction, and that it's that spontaneous conversation that happens and that sharing of knowledge. So acknowledging that that's a requirement in a workplace, you find now that spaces evolve with a greater focus on those collaborative environments that allow the team to come together. Mm. You know, a lot of people choose to take the opportunity in terms of flexible working and, you know, write the report from home because they can lock themselves away. They don't have any disruptions from anybody in the office. But then they come in and actually share that knowledge with the team. So when we're designing workplace, you just need to understand that that's where the drivers are. Mm. I don't believe we're going to be in an environment where the majority are all self-employed, although having said that, you'll find that the prevalence of contractors doing their own thing will increase, and, you know, we may have draftsmen in the future that not only work for us but work for four or five other architects that share their services around, and they're technically self-employed, which is fantastic. It's not a bad thing. I think from a business perspective, it actually avoids some of the issues with the cycles that we go through in the consultancy business where you go from feast to famine on a regular basis. It's just the nature of the beast when you've got a big project. So I think that level of flexibility will help everybody and also allow the staff or the team, that basically the contractors that work for you in the future, to have that variety of what they do and stay engaged as well.
Yeah, you're definitely right, because I know when I left my corporate career, that's the key thing I missed in the transition, was moving from a very team-based workplace where I was to me at home with the cat, and just missing that interaction. It was really lonely.
So you start to go stir crazy after a while.
The cat does not provide much inspiration.
No, exactly.
Not at all.
Plenty of affection when they want to, but
yes.
Very aloof when they want to be as well.
Yeah. But if we can touch on something that you are very much leading in terms of you're on the cutting edge of the aged care industry, which, of course, we're not going to talk about all the terrible things that have been happening there, but more how the aged care industry is evolving in terms of spaces. You know, we've all, well, not all of us, but a lot of us have older parents. I know my parents just refused to move into a retirement village or an aged care village because of the stigma that's attached to it. But now seeing what their spaces that you're creating, I mean, it's somewhere I want to live.
Yeah.
So it's very different, and I think people will be really interested in hearing that, particularly those who aren't exposed to it and who are only exposed to the bad stories that we hear.
Yeah, it's unfortunate though, there are a lot of bad stories floating around, but look, I'm quite pleased to say that a lot of the clients that we have and they work hard to create incredibly great environments for their residents to live in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably, using that term resident is probably the key change. You know, if you go back 20 years ago, they would have referred to them as patients.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the evolution of aged care, or back in the day, they were nursing homes, it was really an alternative version of hospital care. It was, in fact, in many respects, it evolved out of a lower cost version of a hospital environment. So the focus was all clinically based, and by clinically based, it was about looking after those that can't look after themselves. Move to today, the mindset has changed dramatically. The focus is now very much around lifestyle. So it's no longer about doing things for other people, but actually providing services that allow them to do what they can do for themselves for longer, and then supporting them in what they can't do for themselves. So in many respects, for a lot of older people that are living at home alone, the transition to whether it be a retirement village or a seniors living environment, be it aged care, whatever you want to call it, actually becomes an enabling experience. Okay, but there is a lot of stigma associated to it. You're fortunate enough that you've seen a lot of what we do. Because of that lifestyle focus, it's almost an extension of what we talked about earlier with the workplace. People crave that social interaction. By moving into the right aged care environment, it actually creates the opportunities for that social interaction. Whereas, one of the biggest issues with people staying at home for an extended period of time is the loneliness, particularly if you've got a widow or a widower who've lost their key partner. They end up living in a suburb where they become quite disconnected from the surrounding environment, not because anybody is excluding them, but just, there's families around them, the peers that they age with in that street, for example, have moved on or passed away or whatever it might be, and over a period of time they find themselves quite isolated. And the young families that have moved in are leading busy lives, and while they might pop in and say hello on the weekend, throughout the week they're actually busy running the kids around from sports to schools to other bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So we work hard on actually understanding that, really ultimately, call it what you like, but ultimately you're creating an alternative home for the residents that are going to live in that. And hence why we refer to them as residents and not patients.
Mm.
So, instead of living at home, you're living in an aged care environment or a seniors living environment, whatever that may be. So hence the way we design these things is actually facilitating aspects that replicate what you do at home. So, for us, the big thing we always refer to is the four-year-old test. We've all walked into aged care facilities where the first thing that hits you in the face is either the smell of urine or the clinical smell of bleach to kill the urine, and it's a very institutional type environment, and unfortunately you can hear residents screaming in the background. Now, you walk a four-year-old into that space, there's nothing but fear and trepidation going in. You drag them in to see the grandparents, they might do it once, the next time they're going to be kicking and screaming not to. So for us, we design through the eyes of a four-year-old often that if the environment needs to be soft enough and inviting enough that that four-year-old feels welcomed and comfortable. And, we often refer to the other example we run is grandma's house. Kids love going to grandma's house because they run riot. They rule the roost. Grandma lets them get away with everything. So what can we do to actually replicate those environments in an aged care environment where the kids can go out there and be themselves? You don't have a parent having to tell them to shush constantly in that sort of scenario, so that they're annoying their parents to take them to see the grandparents, and that ultimately will enrich the lives of the people living in those environments. So, so we've had a lot of success in communicating that variable across, don't get us wrong, we've got to completely appreciate and understand the clinical aspect associated to it in the background. But what we're finding is if you design a great environment that reduces the anxiety for the resident living within that space, the benefit is not just for the resident, but it actually assists the staff because they're not dealing with patients, as they would have referred to them in the past, or residents that become problem residents, that the anxiety by not understanding what that resident is going through manifests itself in all sorts of behavioural ways, okay? So by creating these environments where the residents are comfortable, even when they're starting to experience dementia and other components, it actually has a positive impact on the way they behave, which then has a positive impact on the adjoining residents and a positive impact on the staff and reduces the workload for them. So it's a win-win for everybody if you do it well and understand the mechanisms behind what drives those behavioural traits.
Yeah, because also moving to the integrated living as well, where there's even childcare centres as part of, like, the seniors living, the aged care component and the childcare.
So we're fortunate enough that we're working with a number of high calibre clients where they really get that, and what we're doing with a lot of the communities we're creating, and they are very much communities, is we're replicating the makeup of a larger community. So they're environments that, yes, are focused on seniors living, whether it be the aged care facility at the core or whether it be the retirement units, using the old terminology. We are now looking to bring opportunities to bring community in. So the integration of the restaurants and the cafes, the integration of the childcare centre. Ultimately, we want to create an organism essentially that provides a reason for people to come to that location. And we genuinely believe that the lives of the residents, the older residents living in that location, are enriched by those interactions with the wider community. The kids at the childcare centre, you know, again, it could be something as simple as if you've got little Johnny, you're dropping him off childcare, you can pop in and see mum or dad afterwards. And even to the, you know, when you take it to the extreme, there's the opportunity there when these kids are at school, they can pop into their grandparents' place and wait for you to get back from work to take them home. You know, we've talked about the concept with a lot of our clients and they're on board with it, where what's to stop one of the kids finishing school and coming into the aged care facility, as we refer to them, and actually spending a bit of time with their grandparents.
Talk about change for the better. This is a very exciting space, I think.
It is. And I think the thing you've got to understand, it really is. And once we, you know, for me, one of the key drivers, you know, I've been in this space now for probably 25 years in terms of that aged care space. And, yeah, some of the places we walked into in the early days just were so institutional and so scary. It was almost like an objective. If ever it comes the day that I need to live in one of these environments, they've got to be damn good. So if I can actually influence that in any way that we can, we'll do so. We've now got the baby boomers moving into that space, and their expectations have led the market for a long, long time. So it's really looking at it through their lens. You know, they've got the ability to basically drive the market direction, and their expectations are going to be high. And they need to be high. All our expectations should be high from that perspective. We shouldn't just, accept a mediocre standard because there's no alternative.
Now, I could keep talking to you about these things for a long period of time, but I'm very conscious of your time. So I've got two final questions for you. First one, how would you like to be remembered?
Look, for me, I'd like to be remembered as a person, I think, that was true to his word, you know, never back down on a promise that I make. And someone that you could rely on from that perspective. You know, my focus for me more than anything else is really my family at the end of the day. That's the key element that drives me. To me, you know, when we talk about immortality, my kids are my immortality and their kids, hopefully. So if we can leave some sort of legacy to them from that perspective, that motivates me more than any material possession or anything like that from that point of view. Other than that, it's actually someone that wasn't afraid to take risks from that perspective and fought for what he believed in.
Yeah. You know. And final question, what advice would you give to your 21-year-old self now, looking back?
I think the best advice I'd give myself and probably give to any young person is, you know, don't be afraid to imagine a future that is unencumbered from that perspective. And what I mean by that is, too often we go from one extreme to the other. You know, we're often telling our kids that they can do anything, right? But what we don't tell them is that, yes, you can do anything, but you need to be able to work for it from that perspective. So, you know, I think that aspect of you can do anything is absolutely correct. And I think I've benefited from the fact that, you know, I've been able to imagine myself in a certain position and then I've been able to work back and work steps to get to that scenario. And I think, yeah, don't be afraid to imagine what the future might hold and let yourself imagine something that most people would suggest is unachievable, you know. Being disappointed is not a bad thing as long as you learn from it and actually reset your expectations and then go again, you know. You might not achieve what you want to achieve the first time, but I'll look at what I've done, you know, against the probabilities. You know, I had a lecturer in third year tell me I should give up architecture. I was never going to be cut out to be an architect from that point of view. I just didn't have what it took. Yet, you know, he's still lecturing and, you know, at university and I've got a practice of close to 40 people, so figure that one out. but yeah, as I say, for me, it's always been, I don't know, I've always imagined myself being in a certain position and then being able to get there. So, and not being fearful of hard work and doing what I need to do to get there. So whenever anybody says you can't do it, it just makes me more driven to do it. So,
yes, absolutely. Yeah. Frank, thank you so much for your time today and for being part of the podcast. I know that people will benefit from your very generous wisdom that you've shared today. And I've learnt an enormous amount from you, from working with you over the years. You're an absolute man of integrity and great wisdom. And I am really grateful to you for sharing your time today.
Well, Julie, we've worked together for quite a long time. You've always been a great asset and assistance to us. So I hope this helps a few other people as well.
It will. Thanks, Frank.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And I hope that you have gained some great ideas and feel inspired to get out there and make what you do count for your leadership, your business, and your life. Please do leave a review for this podcast and please share it with your network. Send any feedback or suggestions for future guests by emailing me, julie@juliehyde.com.au. For now, let's get out there and make it count.